All right, folks, welcome to the Belfast Men's Health Group second series of podcasts with Billy Dixon. Billy's an international speaker, an author, a specialist in personal projection and branding. Today, Billy's going to give us some advice on maximizing our potential and being the best version of ourselves. So before we get into all that, usually what we do is we try and get a wee bit of a background, who Billy Dixon is, what his influences are, and basically how would you describe yourself, Billy?
Oh, just an ordinary person who has been lucky enough to do some extraordinary things, and that's how I would describe myself, Paul. There's nothing special about me. I'm no better or worse than anyone else, but I've just been, I consider myself to be very, very lucky and fortunate in the things that I've been able to do.
Well, tell us a wee bit about your background, Billy. Where did you grow up and how was life at the young Billy Dixon?
Oh, the young Billy Dixon had a ball, I'll be quite honest. I was brought up, I'm a culture, really, because I was brought up in the middle of the countryside, outside a village called Market Hill. And I had a great childhood. I lived in the fields, climbing trees. My family, my father's side of the family had a bit of a reputation. They liked to drink a lot and fight a lot. Mm-hmm. So whenever I went to school, I got tarnished with the same brush. Mm-hmm. So in education terms, I just didn't bother. And at 16, had failed everything. And then went to a place called Armagh Tech, which actually changed my life. But my childhood was brilliant. Now, in saying that, my father died when I was 12. He was an invalid for 9 years. So that had a big influence in my life, because you become the man of the house. I became very protective of my mother and my sister. Mm-hmm. So that, again, influenced me. But what was brilliant about that was, because I lived in a house of two women, I had that, I could see both sides of the story, if you like. Mm-hmm. I could see come from a male perspective and a female perspective. And that has been a huge influence in my life.
Mm-hmm. So at 16, then you went to the tech. What did you study?
Well, I went into the commercial department, Paul. And the only reason I went in there was my mother, she pleaded with me, because I'd been kicked out for mm-hmm. failing everything. And she pleaded, will you give this boy a second chance?
Yes.
And they agreed, but they only agreed to put me in the commercial department. And thankfully they did, because the only reason I went back, because it was all female in that department. So I went back to chase, I went back to chase the girls, and that's the truth. Right. But there were two of my biggest influencers. And I know it's a question you're going to ask, but the two biggest influences in my life, apart from my mother, mm-hmm. was a woman called Peggy Greer and a man called Bob Scott. And they were incredible teachers. They were inspirational. My Bob Scott gave me a love of English and the spoken word and the written word. And he didn't put me in for the normal English courses, you know, like the O-level and A-level we would all know, because mm-hmm. he could spot something in me. He knew there was something wrong with my spelling. I just couldn't see words, and in those days there was no such thing as dyslexia. Mm-hmm. So he put me in for the RSA exams. Mm-hmm. And they were all about telling stories and comprehension, and he introduced me to people like George Orwell, and authors that I had never thought of. Mm-hmm. Peggy Greer literally changed my life, because she did something that nobody else had ever done before in education, Paul. Mm-hmm. She made me feel of value. Mm-hmm. And I was in a class of misfits, and she did exactly the same thing with everybody in that class, and we all passed. And out of that one class, and this is only one class she touched, mm-hmm. out of that one class, every single person in that class went on to greater and better things. It was incredible. She was an incredible woman. And that lesson that she taught me was, make people feel important or valued, because if you can do that, you are a very special individual.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you do tell a story I'm sort of jumping the gun here a wee bit.
Yeah.
You tell a story about Bobby Charton. Can you remember that one? Tell us that one. Tell us that one, Billy. It's a cracker. I love it.
It's back to this thing of making people feel of value. And what I took from Peggy was, it's all about the other person. It's not about you. It's about making the other person feel valued. Mm-hmm. And I was working for a football team called Fulham, who was managed by Chris Coleman at the time. Fabulous guy. Mm-hmm. Brilliant manager. And we are playing Manchester United, the team that I support. Mm-hmm. And after the match, I had to go into the director's box to meet the sponsors. And who did I see but Bobby Charton, one of my childhood heroes. Mm-hmm. And I watched him for an hour, and he went around every person or a group of people in that room, and he spent 5 minutes with them. And I noticed something happening that day. They were talking at him. They weren't talking with him. They were telling Bobby Charton how great they were, what they did, how they could help Manchester United if he introduced them, and he gave them 5 minutes. And about an hour or so later, he went over to get some food, and I went over and stood beside him, and I said, isn't this food fantastic? He says, it's brilliant. He says, where does it all come from? I said, it comes from Harrods. Mm-hmm. And I says, what do you think of the match today? And he immediately relaxed, and he says, you know, I think we've done enough today to get into Europe next year. And I says, who was the most important player for you, for United this season? And he told me who that was and how they were a game maker. And then he told me about that he was the international ambassador and where he was going and who he was going to meet. He told me about his youth academy in the East Midlands. And 1 hour later, we're still talking, and I still haven't said anything about Billy Dixon. Mm-hmm. He says, by the way, Billy, what do you do here? Mm-hmm. I says, well, I try to motivate the team and I work with the sponsors. He says, really? Can I have a business card?
Yes. That's a great story. That is, it highlights, Billy, just what you said about with Peggy Greer. The importance of listening and making others feel important. There's Sir Bobby being made to feel important, nearly.
Yeah, and he was a brilliant man, you know, and his interpersonal skills were superb, but I nobody that day was doing it with him.
Yeah.
Yeah. Such a simple concept.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it's getting people to buy into listening. Yeah, that old saying, Billy, you have 2 ears and one mouth.
You know, it's true. Absolutely true, Paul. And you should be doing it that way, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So tell us a wee bit. Now, I did introduce you as an author. You've a book out, and I've read the book, but I want you to tell me a wee bit about the book. Or what got you involved? What gave you that sort of drive to write a book?
Well, I wrote that book probably at one of the worst periods of my life, mm-hmm. Which would seem surprising. I was going through a messy divorce at the minute. At that time, mm-hmm. I had been in a business partnership, and one of the business partners had embezzled money from the company, and we were all at sea, and the business was up in the air, and everything had gone to pot. So I was in a really bad place, and I thought, how do I get out of this? And I'm a great believer that behavior changes attitude. So I thought, I need to do something here. I can't wallow in my self-pity. So what I did, I sat down and I put all my thoughts on a page. Now, the book itself is not that well written. It's just written in everyday language. But what it does, I try to take away all the nonsense that's talked about motivation and inspiration and get rid of the psychobabble and say, right, here are some of the facts, and this is how life really is. And that has been my approach ever since. Mm-hmm. And it's about trying to tell people, right, everybody's going to go through setbacks, everybody's going to go through hardships, but you know what, we can get through that and we can recover and we can come out the other end. And people say, well, what doesn't kill you makes you stronger. I disagree with that. I think sometimes there are setbacks that people have to just live with. Mm-hmm. And it's how you live with that that gets you through the next phase of your life.
Mm-hmm. Now, you've sort of, in many ways, nearly answered the next wee question that I had. What advice would you give to men? But not just men, because our listeners are, are women as well. So we have a broad range of listeners, and you've highlighted their behaviour changes attitude.
Yeah, well, this is one that came to me whenever I was during that time. There was a toxin had got into my body from somewhere or other, and we're not quite sure where it came from. But the bottom line is, it nearly killed me, mm-hmm. and it attacked the liver, and it nearly destroyed my brain. So I was put on these strongest antidepressants you could imagine. And I was thinking, I know I'm going to recover physically, but can I recover mentally from this? And that was a real struggle at the time. And I remember one day being in the hospital and noticing how I was walking around the ward. I was walking with a stoop in my shoulders, dragging my feet, head down. And I thought, you know what's going on here? My brain is telling me I'm sick, so I'm acting sick. Mm-hmm. In other words, my attitude was dictating my behavior. Now, anybody who's ever been down, and anybody who's ever been depressed, or anybody who's ever just struggled in life in general, will tell you, when you're down, you cannot change your thinking. And anybody who will tell you otherwise has never been there. Mm-hmm. But what you can do, you can change your behavior. So what I forced myself to do, I forced myself to pull my shoulders back and lift my head and look people in the eye and smile even if I didn't feel like it. I changed my behavior, Paul, and then what happened, I changed my behavior, my attitude started to follow, and I started to get following my more and more positive in life. Now, it doesn't mean that I don't have bad days still, but if I have a bad day, even to this day, and I still have black days, mm-hmm. I will pull the shoulders back, I will lift the head, and I will force my behaviors, and then gradually what happens, I become more positive. And isn't it interesting that one of the best treatments for depression today is behavioral therapy? Change your behavior and your attitudes will follow. It's about forming little habits, positive habits, to take you out of that black hole. Mm-hmm. So behavior changes attitude, and that's where it came from for me. And I'll be honest with you, it saved my life, mm-hmm. it saved my career. And I haven't touched an antidepressant now in 10 years. It'll be 10 years this month mm-hmm. that I stopped taking antidepressants. And I, as I say, when I am feeling low, and I still feel low at times, I change my behaviors.
Mm-hmm. It is. I mean, I still have that little mantra myself, behavior changes attitude, behavior changes attitude. And we use it a lot within our group. Because you spoke to us before, of course.
Yes.
Yeah, so absolutely. Brilliant, Billy. So today then, so how do you look after yourself physically and mentally today? What exercise or regime do you have, or do you have one at all?
Oh, I do. I'm a big believer in keeping your healthy body, healthy mind. So this morning, for example, I've had the dog out for a walk. Mm-hmm. I will go to the gym later on. And then I also do yoga. And yoga, believe it or not, has really changed my life. And it's one of these things. I've always gone to the gym, always. Mm-hmm. It's been I call it my sanity. I couldn't live without it. But I found that everything was tightening up. I mean, I'm in my late 60s now, and I found that I was tightening up. I couldn't jump off things. I was hitting things. Now that I've got my flexibility back, it's fantastic. It is brilliant. I can run again. I can jump off things. I can jump over things. I can touch my toes without any problems again. So I would recommend, even if it's not yoga, do something in regards to flexibility. Keep your flexibility at all costs, because I'll watch that film, The American, with Robert De Niro in it. Mm-hmm. And there's a scene where he's acting the young mafia guy, and he's beating up this other guy in the street, and I could tell immediately it was an old man, because his movement was all stiff and it wasn't coordinated. Mm-hmm. And that's because he hadn't been stretching. Do it at all costs. So exercise regularly. Should it be something as simple as a walk? Mm-hmm. is hugely important. Get yourself into nature if you can, and eat healthily, and just look after yourself generally.
Mm-hmm. Also, all good good advice. And first of all, but I didn't realize you were in your late 60s. You're looking good, like, fair play. You're doing right, Leo. That's marvellous.
And, well, I'm 69, Paul. I'm 69, so I'm hanging in there rightly, and I'll never retire. Don't want to retire at all.
That is unbelievable. Well, you're absolutely marvellous. You're in great shape. I definitely wouldn't put you out of it. You're in great shape.
Well, thank you.
As flexibility goes, I don't know. I'm in my 50s, early 50s, but I'm that's one thing I've never been, is that flexible. I might start Pilates or yoga or something to get that wee bit of flexibility going. Okay, now we're down to our last question. Time is flying past. Now, you're not allowed to say you're in the perfect job, but this is just a wee bit of lightheartedness. If you had, you won the lottery or you could have your dream job, what would that be?
Oh, it'd be one of two.
Okay.
There's two things I love. I would honestly love to have been an actor. Mm-hmm. On stage, film, TV, I love performing. I just love it. Mm-hmm. There's one.
Yep.
And then the other one I'd have loved to have done and have been doing it lately is photography. I just find photography fascinating. And so a little man who mentors me, Al Legasmere. Now, he's a funny character. He's worth interviewing. And Al, he's one of the prominent photojournalists in the 20th century and won all these international awards and accolades. And he lived beside me in the place where I used to live. And him and I see each other twice a week, even to this very day. And when he covered the troubles here, his stories are brilliant. But when he covered the stories here, the locals couldn't pronounce his name. Mm-hmm. Legasmere, because he's French.
Right.
So they call him Al Gasmeter.
Yeah, doesn't surprise me.
So very good. Northern Ireland's sense of humour is just brilliant. It is brilliant.
Brilliant. So, but just on a final parting note, how can people contact you if they want to have a yard? In fact, would you will see people in groups, you will see people individually.
Yes.
I do
that. And the way you do it, you can see me on Facebook or Instagram, or just Billy Dixon, that's DIXON, @me.com. Just email me anytime and get in touch.
Perfect. Well, Bill, that time has flown past, and I have to say, again, thanks very much for... you're the first man on our second series of interviews, so thanks very much for taking the time to chat with us.
It's been an absolute pleasure, and I wish everybody the very, very best in the future.
Thank you, Bill.
Thank you.
Take care.
Okay. Bye-bye. Bye-bye, Paul. Bye. Cheers.